You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina.
The voice of Chris Smith.
This is WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on WPVM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. Each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone. And our guest today on A Better World is Jody Evans. Jody is co-founder of Code Pink and serves on the Code Pink Board of Directors. She also served as Director of Administration in California Governor Jerry Brown's first administration and also managed Governor Brown's 1991 presidential campaign. She serves on the board of a number of organizations, including the Drug Policy Alliance, Global Girl Media, Institute for Policy Studies, and Rainforest Action Network. She is primarily focused on sharing a global vision for peace and social justice. She's also produced a number of documentary films, including The People Speak, based on Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, and the Oscar-nominated documentary The Square, which vividly captured the profound democratic uprisings in Egypt. Jody is co-editor of two books, Twilight of Empire, Responses to Occupation, and Stop the Next War Now, Effective Responses to Violence and Terrorism. Jody Evans, welcome to A Better World.
Thank you, McNair. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I know you're a busy person and have been for decades, it looks like, from the website. So I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. For people who may not have heard of Code Pink, can you give us the basics about Code Pink, how it got started, when it started, its history, etc.?
Of course. So, you know, I'm started as an anti-war activist back in the late 60s. And so it's been something I've always been engaged with in some way whenever the moment calls, you know, very deeply engaged in the anti-nuke movement and then engaged with peace in Los Angeles around the Rodney King uprisings. And after they happened, which was right after I ran Jerry Brown's campaign, to get money out of politics, by the way, it was a $100 limit to campaign that said, if you put money in politics, it won't matter what you care for because money will win and we won't have a democracy, which has unfortunately proven true. So working in Watts, I learned from the young men I was working with who were gang members that all their dads had been in the war in Vietnam. And I learned how that war came home to my community, that 20,000 people had been killed in a neighborhood in 20 years and no one talked about it, that it was like under the rug, that and other young people were being scapegoated for that violence that had been brought to their community. And then I hear that Bush wants to invade an innocent country, a country I love, Iraq, the most educated country in the world, where people had 2 and 3 doctorates and master's degrees, where they lived in socialism, everybody had a house, food, education, any amount of education they wanted, and Bush was going to go to war on them. Also a secular country, and he was blaming it for 9/11, but there were no Iraqis on the plane. And also, you know, as a secular country, the people who did commit 9/11 hated Iraq because it wasn't religious. It was secular. The women didn't wear shahad, you know, it was a very progressive country, and it had intended to be. That was part of its mission. So I got on a plane, I flew to D.C., had no idea what I was going to do, and I met up with some girlfriends, Caroline Casey, who's on Pacifica, the visionary activist, said maybe like 6 months before this, when Bush was frightening the American people with the color-coded alerts, orange, red, and yellow. She said we should all call code hot pink. And so I called her and my friend Medea Benjamin, who was there protesting the World Bank. And we ended up at a girlfriend's house. Okay, what are we going to do? And we found out the next day that Congress was going to present this bill to go to war on Iraq. So we made banners, we made little doves of peace, and we hung a banner outside the White House. And Diane Wilson got up on the pole of the way you drive into the White House. And we had this banner that said, no war in Iraq. And the press came running out of the Rose Garden because they thought it was a terrorist. Remember, this is like right after 9/11. And as soon as they figured out we were anti-war activists, it went off the news. So friends are calling us and going, you know, you're on the news, da, da, da. And as soon as they figured it out, that story was gone. We stood on the steps of the White House when you could, of Congress, when you could still stand on the steps of Congress. And we took off our shirts and put on the doves of peace on our bra and wrote across our bellies, read my tits, no war in Iraq, and got a lot of members of Congress to talk to us. And then because press had heard what we did on the steps, when we get inside of the hearing room, all the cameras on us, and we got up and said, no war. The world does not want this war. An interesting thing that happened as we're standing in line to get into that hearing is that Senator Wellstone, who'd been my deputy when I was running the Jerry's campaign, was walking through the halls, and we said, well, you're against the war, right? And he says, well, I'm up for re-election, and, you know, I don't know, I hear da-da-da, and we were like, those are all lies. And, you know, he said, well, the CIA told us and the State Department told us. He was like, that's all lies. And what does it matter if you win? That the most important vote, you vote for war. Like, what does it matter that you're here to us? Mm-hmm. He said, okay, you're right. And he changed his vote. He announced it the next day in a press release. And he went up 9 points in the polls and raised $1 million. So that's what happens to a really amazing senator in the toxic waste dump of the halls of Congress. They believe the lie. They live inside of the lie when the people were with him. So that was a huge lesson for me. And the night before, when I went to start the, you know, put up a website so we could say who we were, I was searching for, you know, to get the website name, Code Hot Pink, and found out it was a porn site, so we had to shorten it to Code Pink. So we are the alert to peace as the violent power is forcing you to think about war and frightening you. So we go to war because we are frightened into going to wars. They're always driven by lies. And so, you know, we bring the truth that leads to peace, not the lies that always lead to war. First casualty of war is the truth.
I look at your website. I mean, it's pages and pages of activities and actions that have been taken and are coming to be taken. How has Code Pink managed to spread itself so far and wide and be involved in so many things?
Well, Code Pink, the team of Code Pink, and many of us have been there for a very long time, Medea Benjamin, my partner, the other co-founder, and Anne Wright, who quit the State Department 3 days before we invaded Iraq, saying she could no longer represent a terrorist government, have been around for like 22 years. Our goal was to create the tools for activists to be engaged with peace. So we're a small team, but hundreds of thousands of people across the country who engage together for peace. So we have local organizations, and it's all volunteers, where we give them the tools, we create the campaigns, we create the press releases or the talking points, we create the pathway to move power. And Medea and, you know, a group of probably a couple of hundred in D.C. that come at different days are in the halls of Congress every day. Now, we've been in the halls of Congress every day since we started. That's part of what we do, is scratch a power, shine a light on power. You know, like the story I told you about the senator, it's like they're inside this toxic waste dump of lies and manipulation that is, you know, fully manipulated by the military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower warned us about. You know, beware the military-congressional-industrial complex. And he said to President Kennedy, your only task is to keep your foot on the brake of the military-industrial complex, which he did and was murdered for. So, you know, we've always been in the halls of Congress. We've always been disrupting hearings where the lies happen, where the distortion happens, where the people are watching, so that our goal from the very beginning, sitting outside of the White House for 6 months, is that when people watch the lies, there's someone else who's carrying another story, where you're given the choice who to stand with, where that you see their, you know, when you're getting sucked into the toxic waste dump, we're there to say, no, there's another story here. Aren't we all for peace? Don't we know war is never the answer? And when 65% of your tax dollars are spent on war, when you need housing and healthcare and education, we're there to tell that story. Right now, the military budget, probably if you totaled all of it, just the numbers the U.S. puts out, it's $2 trillion. $2 trillion of your tax money is spent to destroy the planet because war is the greatest contributor to climate change. What the climate movement won't tell you, because they're supported by rich people who make their money on the military-industrial complex. But it is the greatest contributor to climate change, and it's robbing you and your children and your grandchildren of a future and life.
I recently read an article on Common Dreams website that talked about Trump's recent address to the graduating class at West Point, saying that he was refusing to cut Pentagon spending and touted his push for an annual military budget of $1 trillion, arguing that other programs instead should be on the chopping block. To many people, this seems like utter madness. I mean, when poor and marginalized people are suffering, and to cut programs that affect them while at the same time refusing to even look at cutting the military budget. It's like crazy town. I don't understand.
There, you're acting like that just started. That's what Biden did. That's what.
Yeah, you're right.
Don't put that on Trump. That is the military industrial complex that runs your government. That's every president. That's every party. Please. I mean, Trump is a horrible human being. And he's horrible for the country. But that path was laid by the Democratic Party. So let's not make this a partisan thing. Let's not make this about Trump. This is about the structure. Because people can't do anything about it if they think it's about Trump. They can just be angry at Trump. Mm-hmm. That's not the way to go. Let me just talk about, you know, for me, under Obama, he destroyed the peace movement, and along with a bunch of other progressive movements. It was like the hardest it had ever been at Code Pink. It was really hard. And we were watching all our sister and brother organizations fall away because there was no funding. There was nothing. And we were working very hard. Right after he got elected, we spent that entire year taking 1,000 people to Gaza because it was right after Operation Cast Lead, and 1,000 had been killed, a couple of thousand had been killed in Gaza, and nobody knew really what was happening because we weren't allowed in there. And Mubarak's wife really liked me. We would meet at international peace conferences. So she allowed us to bring in 250 people whenever we had a trip for aid. She was the head of the Red Crescent. So we took 1,000 people to Gaza. I watched friends who were Jewish not be able to talk for a week or a month after they came back because they realized how much they'd been lied to. So we were doing that, and also the Gaza Freedom March, taking 2,500 to do a march in Gaza for the end of the year, which was disallowed by President Mubarak. After that, we, you know, learned that Obama was droning in Pakistan and Yemen, and was killing even American citizens and innocent people across the world. 2,000 drone strikes a month. We engaged in that issue. We brought victims' families to testify in Congress and reduced that to a couple hundred a month. At one point, Obama, recognizing Medea disrupting him, saying, you should listen to that woman. So we brought to fore what was happening with U.S. drone strikes and the hatred it was driving, and also that it was being used by the president of Yemen, who told us that he took his army away from the tip of Yemen so ISIS could enter, and then he could get the president of America to fund Yemen and fund drone strikes and kill his enemies, including the lover of his wife or something. It was ridiculous what the United States was funding, but it did kill two American citizens that were targeted, and the father of the and the grandfather of those American citizens had said to the ambassador and to people in the White House, if you are going to target my son, please tell me I can bring him in. Instead, they murdered him. So, you know, the murder of innocent civilians has been going on in Pakistan. Killing in the middle of freaking nowhere, no capacity to even come to the United States, much less hurt anyone in the United States, droning young men between the ages of 18 and 25. So we go to Pakistan, we meet a village chief. He tells us the story of his son just graduating. He's going to become the teacher of the village. And he describes going into town to bring home the feast so that they could celebrate. And he arrives with his brother and his son, pieces of burning flesh falling from the walls of his home. Crying, he tells us the story and starts pounding the table. I just want to kill an American soldier. I just want to kill an American soldier. And one of the Code Pink activists says to him, if you had a drone and you could fly it over the United States, what would you do? And he said nothing, because I would kill innocent people. So that is the humanity we were murdering with our inhumanity. So
could you say a bit more about that idea of not laying the blame at the feet of one person?
We need to understand the structure we live in, you know, which is why I ran a presidential campaign that only took $100 33 years ago. These words get thrown around like democracy, and we get dumbed down by them. We think that, you know, I tell people when they give money to a politician and they think it's a good thing, that that politician is then going to go buy a vote with it, that that dumbs down the electorate, that it becomes about a fight instead about critical thinking. We as a country have lost critical thinking. And I went home after Congress voted us to war with Iraq and asked Dave Eggers to help me start an 826 LA in my community, because I wanted someone to know how to critically think in my country, because we don't know how to critically think. We know how to be angry. We know how to be dumbed down. We know how to get into tiny fights that we don't understand the depth of the situation. And so at Code Pink, we feel very committed to helping people think about these things. We educate. We have webinars like 3 times a week, but we also have gatherings 3 times a week where people come together just to be able to vent what they're feeling so we can help each other through what we are now living in. We are living in what our psyches were never built for. We are living in horror. Watching children being burned to death and hearing their screams. Watching our government fund weapons that are killing innocent people. Watching a people be erased, an intentional erasure of people. Watching them being starved to death. And then in the last 2 days, watching them be kettled into cages is just horrific. And people don't know how to think about it. But we've been working on this problem since Obama, because we saw then that we live in a culture of a war economy. And that culture has forced on all of us addictions. And, you know, I actually use Asheville as an example when I teach. So I am very excited to be on your show, because Asheville actually is a peace economy culture, more than many cities in America. It's more connected. It's more relational. It has more of a commons that has been eviscerated from most places. But, you know, when I talked about it, when I started the local peace economy work, when I understood from working in the Obama years that we live in a war economy, that We won't end war till we end the war economy. And I call capitalism the war economy because people need to understand what it is doing. It is the extractive, destructive, oppressive economy, killing you, your community, and the planet. And, you know, it's eating itself alive, which we heard from Marx when we read Capital, that end stage capitalism would be that it ate itself alive.
If you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. Okay, that's Prayer for Peace from the album Sacred Choral Music in the Modern Age, and that's Agnes Dei by Samuel Barber. And today our guest on A Better World is Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. So just before the short break, Jody, you were talking about the peace economy and the military economy, so continue.
Well, I call it the war economy.
War economy.
Yeah, because it is extractive, destructive, and oppressive. And it is what war serves. War serves the war economy. It's what it does. It's like it's at war with everything that would get in the way of the capitalists making more money. That's what it does. So I really recognized that under the Obama administration. I went, oh, not only does war serve the war economy and we're not going to be able to end it till we end the war economy, but the war economy is the culture we're living in. And that culture forces on us what I call addictions that keep it propped up and keep us unrelated. And it's happened over time. And you and I, McNair, can see the difference. We can see what it was like in the 70s is way different than what it's like now. Who we were and how we related and what communities were like. There was still a commons in most cities in the 70s. We didn't live out of so much fear. Matter of fact, I was a hippie. We lived out of liberation and positivity and, you know, peace and love. Mm-hmm. Everything didn't cost as much money. And we had a much more freedom at how we could choose because we weren't up against the wall of like, how am I going to pay for this? And, you know, everything felt scarce. Well, scarcity is one of the ways the war economy thrives. If we believe in scarcity, it's why when people say we're going to end homelessness, I'm like, not to end the war economy, because homelessness is necessary for the war economy to thrive, because it needs homelessness for you to be afraid and hold on to your job. It's going to make you afraid. The war economy makes you afraid. You live out of anxiety. And scarcity is one of those things.
So is part of the big major problem that we live in a capitalist economy?
A culture. We live in a capitalist economy, but it's our culture. We don't recognize how it affects our culture. Yes, it's a capitalist economy, which is already us agreeing to violating everything in the world. It's also our culture that we don't recognize. It also makes us as humans. I mean, indigenous cultures look at it and think it's crazy. I mean, I work with a lot of indigenous people from Rainforest Action Network when I'm in the jungles in Ecuador and Brazil, and they look at it like we're freaking insane. Mm-hmm. And they're right. We are freaking insane. We have been pulled into this insanity. We have given up our lives to this madness. And so the reason I think it's important to look at the system is because if we look at individuals, we're not looking at the system and we're agreeing to the system. And if, you know, if you want to agree to a system that's violent and destructive and oppressive, you know, like a lot of MAGA people do, that's why they follow Trump, because he's, you know, that's their, you know, that's their agreement. And the racism that is endemic to capitalism and the war economy. But indigenous cultures, the way that life has survived for millennia is the peace economy. It is what indigenous cultures still know. It is the giving, sharing, caring, thriving, relational, resilient economy, without which none of us would be alive. It is even how you and I are alive. The caring of a parent until we leave home is a gift. There's not a reciprocality in that. It's just a gift. The way our friends treat us, the way those who care for us treat us, you know, the caring economy, the doctors, the nurses, the teachers, the, you know, those that care, where their job is rooted in care for. That's what makes us human. That's what gives us life. But do you know all of those things, and McNair, I know you know this, have been starved, have been shrunk, that the money goes to the war economy and shrinks the peace economy, shrinks the care economy. It's like where you look if you look at what's happening in Palestine, what did they attack first? First, they killed the journalists. Then they killed the doctors and the nurses and then the caregivers and then the ambulance drivers and now the children, the future. So if you want to watch what our future looks like, watch Palestine. If you don't want that to happen to you, stand in the way of it. Fascism, that is what is happening in Palestine. The fascism of Zionism is coming to the United States and is also coming to many other countries. Because when you make the people afraid, when they become tools of the war economy, then the peace economy gets starved. And when the peace economy is starved, we're then not rooted in our own humanity, because the peace economy is the rooting in our own humanity. And let me say that AI, if we get too attached to AI, we're over as humanity.
How so?
So because AI, if you are not grounded, even scientists have already reported that if a child gets connected to AI before it's 21, it will no longer be able to think critically. So indigenous knowledge is critical thinking. Indigenous knowledge is a relationship to the planet and to each other. And it's all through heart and thinking. It's all through how do we work together? What do we learn about life that it needs that we continue? How do we pass that on? We are not passing on to other generations how life continues. Life, our DNA is committed to life. We are not. We have been dumbed down. Those addictions I'm talking to in the war economy have dumbed us away from life. The rest of the world looks at the United States of America and thinks we're pretty dumb. And we are, because we make decisions externally. I mean, I look at my grandchildren, they make their decisions from an external, not an internal. You know, how does life survive is in relationship to the planet, which is the life-giving source. Why are we alive as the planet? You know, who are the caregivers? Are the farm workers? Are the farmers? Are the dogs? You know, like if we can't care for each other, life will end. So the peace economy, which I want to say Asheville understands more than most cities, because I use this example from the crisis in, 2008. You know, Asheville did better than most places. Why? Because people knew each other in workplaces. They figured out how everybody could keep their job. The banker knew the person with the loan and didn't kick them out of their house. People are more related and live in a more caring society. Look at what happened after the floods. People were there for each other. Mm-hmm. The culture already exists. A peace economy culture already exists in Asheville because of the connectivity, because a commons has been able to remain, because the people there know about the value of life, you know, why do people live there is because of the peace economy culture, and it's not perfect. It's, you know, nothing is perfect, but people in Asheville understand it better.
So does the peace economy, that could take place, to hear you describe it, in any kind of economic environment, be it capitalism or socialism?
the peace economy is socialism. Socialism is the care of each other, right? Mm-hmm. Socialism is how do we make sure everyone has food, everyone has a home, everyone is cared for. That's socialism. So the peace economy is socialism. And in Asheville, there is more of a socialist character. It's closer to Cuba than it is to New York City. You know, it's like, when you go to Cuba, what do you feel? You feel love, right? You feel the care. You feel, so that's the culture. Everybody in Cuba is, they know they have a meal. They have a calmness about that. They know they're going to be cared for by their community. That's socialism. In, you know, in Asheville, there's more of a socialistic value than a war economy value. Now, nowhere is it perfect, but it's what is the culture? And I would say in Asheville, there's more of a culture of care than a culture of violence. It's like you're not rooted in, you know, how do we use people, racism, fascism. That's not the core tenancy of Asheville. So, you know, there are, here are some of the, what I call the war economy addictions that are forced on us. Alienation. Competition, transactional. Transactional is one of the big ones. It is the most unconscious one that we just all soak in like it's okay. The war economy forces on us the addiction of transactional instead of relational. And it's at Code Pink one of the hardest ones for everyone to break because the war economy forces it on us every day. Transactional, transactional, transactional. And when I look at my grandchildren, that's all they operate out of. Relational. How to show up in a relationship that is not transactional. I mean, we even show up in them in our marriages. You know, so it's, you know, the peace economy, you know, what is it just to care? When you're in the Middle East, which is more a peace economy, even Iran is more a peace economy than because it doesn't it's not a capitalist economy. So it's more a peace relational economy, even with nothing, even after we've starved everyone to death there and then exacerbated the middle class, people with nothing still invite you in for food. You are still the stranger, which, you know, you are still the person everyone is the stranger that I take care of. That's the peace economy, that we're all connected. You know, every religion is rooted in the peace economy because they became out of how do we live together as humans. All religions arose out of that need. And, you know, when I'm in China and I realize that this culture I'm living in is 2,500 years old, it's really like a Confucianism, which isn't even a religion, but it is a culture. The Confucianism was a culture of like, how do we care for each other? How do we see not ourselves, but how do we make decisions out of the person we're related to, our family, our community, the bigger culture that takes care of us, the world, the planet, the universe? When you are connected to everything, you have less anxiety. I mean, when I look at the stars, I have less anxiety. When I look at the flower outside of my house growing, I have less anxiety. But that's not what we're acculturated to in the United States. It's like, you know, how I'm going to eat, how I'm going to get a house, how, you know, who's going to hate me, who's going to love me. Like, people in the world don't even understand us in that way. What I watched happen recently, you need to do a station break right now?
Yeah, why don't I? Okay, if you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink, and she also serves on the Code Pink Board of Directors. And she's co-editor of two books, Twilight of Empire, Responses to Occupation, and Stop the Next War Now, Effective Responses to Violence and Terrorism. And you're listening to us at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org.
You see me coming, you feel like running,
That wicked luck is in your eyes. I don't come to harm you. I come to warn you. It's now or never, do or die. 'Cause I had a vision, a head-on collision, a revelation, yeah, that sent me on a mission.
I come in peace.
Love is a gold mine, yeah. To find it, you have to seek it. Follow your heart's sign. It's flowing rich and deep, and well within my reach. I come in peace. I come in peace. Arrived with nothing, and let me tell you something. We're going out the same way. I got your attention, and maybe I should mention, won't be no rest in peace in me. Love is a gold mine, yeah. To find it, you have to seek it. Follow your heart's sign. It's flowing rich and deep, and well within my reach. I come in peace.
Okay, welcome back. That's Joe Cocker singing I Come in Peace from the album Fire It Up. And our guest today on A Better World is Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. Thinking back about what you said before the break, the biggest question that comes to my mind at this point is, how do we get people to not be so complacent about war, the war economy, and the use of war as an instrument of national policy? How do we change that complacency into action so that people can help bring about change?
Well, I say you engage them in the local peace economy, because as soon as you come out of the toxic waste dump that has been poured on you of the war economy, and you start to relate again in peace economy habits, you become alive. And I've watched it happen. Now it's hundreds, it's millions of people now since I've started this. And there's things happening all over the country and all over the world. And the one thing I can say is you wake up. You wake up to your humanity. You wake up to what's around you. Because, you know, as humans, we can only really affect what is closest to us. And we've been convinced by clicktivism and technology that we have this huge influence around the world and we can click and make things better in the world. It's a lie. We've been, you know, reprogrammed, and that our sphere of concern has shrunk. We've become individualist, and our sphere of concern is ourselves. And we think our sphere of influence is global. It's, you know, what I call, I was with a taxi driver, and he said, "Don't people in the United States know that empires are stupid? Didn't they watch Star Wars?" But we are the empire. So the first thing is understanding that you are it. If you live in the United States, you are it. So when you start complaining about Trump, quit pointing a finger and start being the solution. Because any energy put towards Trump is a freaking waste of your life. So take all your energy off of Trump. For like, that is a waste of your life. And he is trying to suck it in. Why does he outrageous? Why does he do all these outrageous things? So you will pay attention to him. So if you really want to affect Trump, take every bit of your life and attention away. So the structure is the structure. You are a person. You are not going to change that structure. But you, together with others, are going to, while this structure is collapsing under itself, are going to build the future. Because the structure is collapsing under itself. I call it a tsunami. Global inequality, global climate change, coming AI. You know, this tsunami is coming. You are not going to stop it. But it is going to destroy itself. Your job is to root yourself in care, in the peace economy, in the giving, sharing, caring, thriving, relational, resilient economy. That's your task. And to root yourself in your community and to root yourself in the values you are going to live out of. Mine value is to serve life and to create conditions conducive for life. When I do that, peace will happen. And so I feel like I'm like Jody Appleseed running around the country, planting seeds of peace, because if we're not building peace, if all our energy is paying attention to war, war will happen. That because that's where you're putting your energy. If we are building peace, if we are building a future, if we are breaking these horrible addictions that have been forced on us and helping others break them, and if we're practicing peace together, because you have to do it together, you have to get out of the individualism first and realize that everything is about community. And I mean community, not a cult, community. And community is uncomfortable. Democracy is uncomfortable. It is not uncomfortable. It is not it. And ask anybody in another democracy, because we don't know what it is. If you are not building a future, we're doomed, because we're going to live in this thing we're living in gets worse every year. If you want to watch Palestine and what's happening and watch it get worse every month, and the most horrible things happen, like that you can never, ever, ever imagine, and then they get worse, you think, oh, can't get worse. And it gets worse and worse and worse. It's coming for you. They, you know, remember, you know, if they, I didn't show up for them, and who's here to show up for me? That's real. And when slavery or a Holocaust was happening, it happened because of good people being silent. So whatever you thought you would have been doing during slavery and the Holocaust, you're doing it right now. And think about that. And think about what you're going to say to your grandkids. So building a future of peace is up to all of us. And what it does is in the creating of the community, I would say all those peace economies that we have around the country that are code pink, they do the most amazing peace economy work in their community. And it what makes them strong. It what makes everyone more human. And it what it's what helps everyone get through this. Because part of why people aren't engaged is it's overwhelming. And you've got to bring it back to human scale. You've just got to bring it back to human scale. You've got to bring yourself back to human scale. All you can do as a human is what is closest to you. Mm-hmm. And you've been told a lie. Long ago, I think a business leader said, you know, there's your sphere of influence, which is very small, and your sphere of concern, which is very big. In my lifetime, we've come to where we think our sphere of influence is very big, and our sphere of concern has become ourselves, which is really scary. And so if you can look at those things, which we look at in the peace economy work, all you get to do is, because a lot we're like stuck in guilt, we're stuck in shame, we don't know what to do, we're overwhelmed. So the first thing is all of those things are taking your life away from you. And the first thing we do with the peace economy is drop all of that. Every time you feel it, move into the peace economy. Every time you feel it, practice a pivot to peace. And all of a sudden, you're back to being yourself. You're back to being alive. And I just want to say, in Los Angeles, with the fires, I really learned, because we created the peace economy tools like you have in you know, leadership from Asheville, and watched what happened in with the floods. And it's like, we have to have all these things before whatever's going to happen happens. I call it, we're building the ark for the flood, for the tsunami. If you have the ark, if you have the organizations and the local peace economy communities that are there to help you when the disaster happens, there'll be less trauma. There'll be more connectivity. Actually, it will bring the community together, back together, to remember what community is, to remember who we are together, to remember what we can build together. And we don't become the dystopic humans that we see in the movies. We become the beautiful humans that live inside of us, that have been distorted by the war economy. We become the caring, sharing humans that rebuild community. And so that happened in Los Angeles with the fires, is people who had super individualized, selfish people recognized the giving, sharing, caring person inside themselves, and they fell in love again with their community. So it's right there. It's very easy to crack the war economy surface, to peel off the toxic waste up of the lies, and to go back to creating community and culture and life.
And I would refer people to the Code Pink website, because there's a link, not only a lot on there about peace economy, but there's also a link to another website about peace economy, so people can find out a lot more about it. Let me ask you, since you've brought up Gaza a few times, that's one of the, and I'm trying to think of all these things in terms of what you said about refocusing on the peace economy, but the Gaza situation, as you said, keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I've had a lot of people on the show talking about how they're working for peace, but nothing seems to change.
I'm interested in this link between the U.S. government and the Israeli government. Does the Israeli government have the same mentality for a war economy that the U.S. has? Or is this friendship between the U.S. government and the Israeli government based on this Judeo-Christian history that we share together?
It has nothing to do with religion and everything to do with oppression. So Israel was created, and Zionism was created as to be a puppet of the United States Empire. And Zionism itself is fascism, and it's oppressive. It's like everything any normal human hates, the oppression of another human. That's what it is. And the robbing, the extraction of a human from their generational home in a violent, horrible way. My husband was Jewish. He died 15 years ago, but he spent 20 years of his life funding every Jewish anti-Zionist voice he could that lived in Israel. Most of them got kicked out of Israel. Zionism is violence. It is the oppression. So trying to get to peace inside of violence isn't possible. That's why I say, you know, I can't end war till I end the war economy. You can't have peace until people aren't oppressed. I mean, it's just like, that's all, you know. Israel has to stop oppressing people. And oppressed people have the right to resist. It's in the UN Charter. Oppressed people have the right to resist. The oppressor does not have the right to oppress. And the people stand with Israel is shameful. It is oppressive. It is violence. It itself is a bloody horror. And that if you can listen to Bibi Netanyahu and not have your skin crawl, I don't know who you are. I mean, I really don't understand. And what I do understand is that you've been lied to and you are being used by this. And I'm sorry for you. I feel sad. I'm very sad that your life has been used for violence. I am very sad. I am very sad when I watch teachers and parents in Israel teach their children to hate the most beautiful people I know in the world. Palestinians are a peace economy. They are peace. They are so freaking beautiful and strong and caring. And that we are killing them is a crime to the whole world. We need people who still remember what it is to live with the land, what it is to live in peace, what it is to live caring for each other. And I, you know, the fact that people are witnessing, I love Ms. Rachel. I mean, Ms. Rachel, the Mr. Rogers of my time, who, just because she's an innocent human, not connected to any of the horrible stories that people are being used by, and looks at children dying and does what any human should do, say, stop killing the children. The fact that someone is caught up in a story and can't say that means they've been dehumanized. Mm-hmm. To dehumanize, you have to already be dehumanized. So everyone at Code Pink that is engaged in the local peace economy, they get together every day and in some way speak to this. I'm just finishing 7 days of a hunger strike. I've stood outside restaurants and shopping centers and grocery stores. And I've just said, you know, I'm on my whatever day of a hunger strike of the fast for Gaza. Do you know that everyone comes up to me thanking me? And just the deepest gratitude. We just did a banner hang on Sunset Boulevard over the 405 last weekend. Everybody honking in gratitude. We know that over 75% of the Democrats, it's the only thing the Democratic Party voters agree on, is end the war on Gaza. They don't, the numbers, the percentages, it's like they 60% agree on climate change, under 50% agree on immigration. Over 70% agree we need to end the war on Gaza. But the people in power are owned by the Zionist lobby. Freaking owned. I watch them. They are so dehumanized. I just feel sorry for them. They can't answer questions. They want to, I mean, the horrible ones, the ones that work in Congress that are IDF officers. We have members of Congress who serve Israel. They are citizens of Israel. But the rest of them are just bought by Israel. I mean, to be violent murderers and serve, like, so that's why I say, take your energy off of this thing that has been occupied by war and build peace.
Because so what's hope that will be accomplished by things like Fast for Gaza or the BDS movement?
Oh, we've educated people. Otherwise, you're dumb. Otherwise, everyone will just be dumb and violent. So if you think if the Zionism just had its way and you didn't have a BDS movement and you didn't have us in Congress, people would be dumb. But the thing is cracking. The lie is cracking. It's shattering. If unfortunately, we live in the United States and people don't know that, but governments aren't shipping to Israel anymore. Palestine has now embassies in countries. Heads of countries are speaking out. Unfortunately, the people in the United States are dumber than the people in Israel, which is really bad. But, you know, the people in Israel and the media in Israel makes the people smarter than the media in the United States. Like, if you want to learn about Palestine, go to our CodePink/Palestine. We have a campaign on media. There is a teach-in on Zionism there. One of our members just did at the head of Paramount, and CBS has changed. If you want to watch CBS, if you want to watch Stephen Colbert, you know, like there, we have cracked into the lie machine. But when you're up against billions and billions of dollars being spent to make you dumb, it takes work. It takes people that are committed teaching every day. So we go out in our communities as local peace economy to teach what it is, you know, that's really happening and how you're being used by lies. Every war is a lie. Every war started by a lie. The United States, by the way, this is not the worst the United States has done. The lie of Iraq killed 5 million Muslims in the Middle East. We're watching hundreds of thousands. We're watching it live screen. That happened already. We, with our tax dollars. So if you are ashamed of what you've done with your tax dollars, the thing you need to do is be building peace and be helping the people around you come from caring, come from life, come committed to life, not committed to death. This structure has to end because it is the most violent. As Martin Luther King said so many times, it is the greatest terrorist on the planet. He said that 50 years ago. It has only increased by magnitudes, because we're not just killing in Gaza, we're killing around the world. And that $1 trillion budget that Congress is approving, because it's Congress, not Trump, a president doesn't make a budget that Congress does. Congress is what is the pocketbook for war. That is being built to go to war on China.
Let me just take a quick break if I could. Carlyle Group since years before. You're listening to a conversation with Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink, and you're listening to us at A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina.
Freedom, go pink, for peace, go pink, to hunger and
Okay, that's Emma's Revolution singing Code Pink from the album One.
Right before the break, you brought up China. Can you say more?
China is not our enemy. China's not going to war on the United States. China doesn't go to war on people. It's not an imperialist country. It's a country committed to its people and the world. So they're now trying to drive a war on China and make you hate China. But guess what? We've had a campaign for 5 years. We've moved that number down. We've moved people hating China down, even with billions of dollars spent to make you hate China. And, you know, one of the ways it happened, they were trying to close down TikTok. People thought that was about China, but it was about Palestine, because young people were learning about Palestine, and they've closed down people learning about Palestine with Facebook and with Twitter, but they couldn't do it with TikTok. So they tried to close it down. But China said, you know, we're not going to sell it to you. And so people in the United States started going on Red Note, thinking it was going to get closed down, and they wanted to be connected to China. So they went on Red Note in China. And what did they do? They learned about China. Like, oh my God, how kind these people are, how much fun it was to talk to them, how much they learned from each other. Cooperation and friendship is peace. And so here it was happening. And everybody's like, oh, this wonder of China, this amazing place. As I say, when I go to China and I take people to China, they go, I've seen the future and it is beautiful. So we can't make China the enemy. That's what power does, to use us and our money. So please, we have a campaign at Code Pink called China is Not Our Enemy. And all we do is try to teach you. You've been lied to about China the same way you've been lied to about Palestine. And so all we can do is not be used by the power, not be used by the military-industrial complex. Remember to be human, to see each other as the other human, and to be peace. So I've given you tools to build peace. Go to peaceeconomy.org. It's all there. We make it very relational. You can learn a lot. We have a call every other week. You can join and ask questions, and we support you. Well, lots of, we have a whole ecosystem you can learn in, lots of stories to learn in. At Code Pink, we have ways for you to be engaged. When you're frustrated, be engaged. That is the antidote. Be engaged, be in the streets, do something together. That will calm your anxiety and give your humanity back, because that's what you do. Teaching others is how you create peace. We all need to be teaching right now. We live in a toxic waste dump of lies. Find out the truth. Teach people, not because you need them to learn, not because you need something back from them, but that is your offering. Do it as an offering. Don't hammer people with the truth. Just offer it. You know, just be an offering. Like McNair, here is an offering for you to see the world in a different way. McNair, thank you for sharing the truth. Thanks for sharing Code Pink, codepink.org. Please engage with peace. If you want peace, it starts with you. You are the answer. And please take all of your energy away from the hate of the system that is going to fall under its own weight, and start building a future with your friends.
Okay. On that note, I want to thank Jody Evans for being on the show today, co-founder of Code Pink. Jody, thank you so much for the years of work you do and are still doing, and all the best to you and the folks at Code Pink.
Thanks, McNair. Thanks for having me.
March to my own. You've been listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next time on A Better World. And we're going out today with the Chicks singing March, March from their album Gaslighter.
To my own. Thank you for tuning in.